was run by the Gonzalez family, first-generation Mexican-Americans whose parents had come to Kentucky in the 1970s to find seasonal work on the tobacco farms. The three siblings served affordable, delicious Mexican cuisine with just the right amount of authentic, mariachi-ized ambiance and a smile, even when the locals butchered Spanish while ordering quesadillas. Hector, the oldest Gonzalez, led us to the back room, which was set up for large parties. When Head Courtney saw the unassuming spot under crisscrossed guitars and a neon sign for Dos Equis, she shook her head and said, "We would like a different table," with a loud, deliberate pronunciation. Then she repeated the phrase with big, swooping hand gestures. Apparently, Head Courtney didn't think that Hector spoke English, but she did believe that when you speak really slowly and loudly, English automatically becomes whatever language is understood by the person you're yelling at. "We want that table," Head Courtney said, pointing to another long table underneath huge hanging bunches of dried garlic and chili peppers. Then she added more hand gestures. Hector, who had been the go-to grammarian for my honors English class at Half Moon Hollow High, looked to me with a puzzled expression. I rolled my eyes and shrugged. Several of the Courtneys seemed to be watching me as we approached the table. As we were seated, I mentally reviewed the benefits of belonging to the Chamber of Commerce. Legitimacy, contacts, free advertising. I said it over and over in my head like a mantra to keep me from strangling one of the Courtneys with their imitation coach purse straps.
"Thank you,"
Head Courtney said loudly. Hector nodded.
"Good to see you, Jane. I'll have a server with y'all in just a few minutes,"
he said in his perfect, heavily southern-accented English. Hector, who insisted on being called Heck in school, had always looked a little like Lou Diamond Phillips and sounded a lot like Larry the Cable Guy. I winked at him. Head Courtney looked momentarily confused, but quickly forgot her ethnic profiling as she watched me settle in with a menu, ignoring the cluster of dried garlic hanging over my head. Contrary to what movies would have you believe, vampires aren't allergic to garlic. It does, however, smell to high heaven, and we have super-sensitive noses. But it had been a long time since the specimens overhead had remotely resembled usable food. The smell was strong, but not unpleasantly so. It reminded me of coming to Puerto when I was living. Zeb and I would come on Tuesday nights to split a carne asada platter and chat with Hector over cheap beer.
"Are you okay there, Jane?"
Cankles Courtney asked, peeking carefully over her menu. She nodded up to the garlic.
"Jenny said you have allergies?"
I'll bet she did. I glared Jenny's way, but she seemed completely absorbed by her menu. I smiled sweetly at Cankles Courtney. "Thanks for asking, but I'm fine." Cankles Courtney gave Toady Courtney a triumphant look as if to say, "See, I told you, she's not a vampire." I sighed, making a show of studying the menu. I missed carne asada, and chocolate, and ice cream, and lasagna, and cheeseburgers. Basically, I missed all food, except Brussels sprouts. It still irked me that my last meal had consisted of potato skins and liquor. People who get the chair receive a better culinary send-off. I wasn't going to order the carne asada because that would just be depressing, even if I used Jolene's disgusting food-craving imagery. I decided on tamales. They were mushy and messy, and it would be difficult to tell how much, if anything, I was eating. Plus, I'd never liked them much, so staring at them for an hour or so without being able to eat them would be bearable. Our server suffered through our ordering pronunciations with a brave face. When he came to me, I ordered the tamales, and whatever remaining interest the Courtneys had in my eating habits seemed to melt away. The server stared at me for a long moment and then asked,
"And to drink?"
I thought about sweet, fortifying tequila, since all of the Courtneys were planning on bellying up to the margarita trough. But I wanted to keep my wits about me so I wouldn't get wrangled into cleaning up after the petting zoo or any of the other undesirable jobs Courtney had lined up. "Water's fine, thanks." The server seemed to sense a weakening in my resolve and continued staring at me. I took the bar menu from the little plastic console in the middle of the table. "Actually, I'll have a beer." The Courtney on my left gasped in horror. Jenny sneered as I looked over the beer selections.
El Torrente Sanguineo?
He asked. For a moment, I and my 3 years of poor Spanish instruction thought he was asking if I wanted a raincoat with that. I squinted at him. He pointed to a selection near the bottom of the menu. The little dark brown bottle on the illustration looked like any beer. I knew that Sanguineo probably had something to do with sangre, which translated to blood, and torrente probably meant river or stream. So it probably translated to something like bloodstream or vein. Was he offering me synthetic blood? I looked up at the server, who smiled back at me, looking a little dazzled. Now that they'd been thoroughly horrified by my choice to drink beer in public, the Courtneys weren't paying attention to what I was ordering. I guess they figured vampires wouldn't drink beer and order tamales. Please, I said emphatically, smiling back. The waiter practically scrambled over the adjoining booth in his rush to get our drinks back to us. He set the brown bottle in front of me with a flourish, a slice of lime carefully balanced in the lip. I thanked him as he served the margaritas and took a long pull from the bottle. Ah, sweet, slightly spicy, a thick coating of synthetic blood rolled down my throat and soothed my nervous stomach. I was going to have to remember this brand. The waiter watched me expectantly. I wanted to smile, but I was pretty sure my teeth would be bloodstained for the next few minutes. Also, my fangs were trying to creep out of my mouth. I pressed my lips together, but nodded enthusiastically. I was going to have to tip this guy in a serious way. The waiter backed away from our table, but promised to be back soon.
If Jane's done eye-flirting with the server, Head Courtney said, clearing her throat and pursing her thin, cranberry-glossed lips, we should start the meeting.
Crap, I'd totally forgotten why I was there. It was a good thing I'd elected not to drink. Courtney tried to stick me with the petting zoo cleanup, sitting in the dunk tank, and putting down the deposit on the inflatables, out of my own pocket, apparently, with the hope that the Courtneys would remember to reimburse me. Each of the committee chairs was given a progress evaluation. Head Courtney wasn't pleased with our work. Cankles Courtney, who was in charge of food, had neglected to think of vegetarian options for the festival attendees, because nothing says old-fashioned family fun like a tofu dog. Short Courtney, who was in charge of publicity, had yet to secure an interview with the local morning radio show so that Head Courtney could educate the masses on the importance of the chamber's philanthropic efforts. Also, Short Courtney had ordered the promotional posters in an autumnal burnt orange instead of the chamber's signature pink, so 5 demerits for her. I was failing miserably, and I was lucky that Jenny was there to save my butt. Head Courtney placed her right hand on Jenny's shoulder while she pronounced this. Jenny tried to preen subtly, but failed. I was reminded of the scene in The Omen when Damien realizes the extent of his evil power. Seriously, could I buy my way out of this gig? What if I just gave Head Courtney $5,000 for the animal shelter, and then moved and changed my name? By the end of the meeting, Head Courtney had 4 empty margarita glasses next to her plate and was starting to tell the other Courtneys what she really thought of them. Short Courtney needed to get her roots done. Cankles Courtney had, well, cankles. Toady Courtney had almost reined her in when Head Courtney's gaze fell on me. At this point, I'd been pushing tamales around my plate for 2 hours while watching my sister get fawned over. As far as I was concerned, Head Courtney could bring it on. Head Courtney was swaying in her chair, her corn-silk blonde hair clinging to the light sheen of drunk sweat on her cheeks.
You think you're so much smarter than the rest of us, that we don't know what you really are.
Courtney, I don't think you're feeling very well, Toady Courtney said loudly, her brown eyes wide with alarm. Those enchiladas must have been rancid. Oh, don't interrupt her, Courtney, I said, smiling and tilting my head. I think she was on a roll. The jig, apparently, was up, and I felt a little foolish for picking at those damn tamales. Oh, well, I might as well have some fun with it.
Jenny told us all about it. You think we would have let you in if we had known?
Head Courtney hissed.
We would never. And now we can't kick you out because you people sue for discrimination at the drop of a hat. We don't want you to pull a Frink on us.
Did she just call me you people? The whole table was suddenly quiet, as if Courtney had dropped a glass dome over us. Suddenly, it all made sense. The stupid tasks, the poor performance reviews, the general bitchiness. It wasn't just that they didn't like me. They wanted me to quit. They'd managed to weed out everyone who didn't live up to their standards through intimidation and misery, but they couldn't get rid of me because I scared them. I was making them miserable by my mere presence. I smiled, letting my fangs peek out just the tiniest bit. "Jenny, I'm surprised at you," I said in my blandest tone. "I thought you'd be too ashamed to tell anybody about your sister's shameful vampire condition. I mean, really, where's the benefit in outing me? Aren't you afraid of tarnishing your reputation?"
"Sister?" Head Courtney slurred. "What do you mean, sister?"
The silence was broken, and a rush of whispers rounded the table of Courtney's. Now it was my turn for my jaw to drop. I stared at Jenny. "You told them I'm a vampire, but you didn't tell them I'm your sister?" Jenny's jaw clenched. Her face turned a pasty shade of oyster gray. "There was no reason to. My sister died last year." I waited for the twist in my chest, the pain of being rejected by Jenny once again so she could spend time with people who were better, more important than me. But it didn't come. I was used to it. She'd made her feelings clear a long time ago. There was a freedom in just not giving a damn anymore. And Jenny had granted me this gift. I was free. I could walk away. Part of me wanted to give Jenny and the Courtneys what they wanted. I could quit and walk out the door so they'd have to pay for my synthetic blood tab. But the more perverse part of my personality was intrigued by the possibilities. So I did something that shocked the Courtneys. I laughed. Everyone at the table winced as I threw my head back and laughed like a big old donkey. I giggled until my sides ached. I laughed for every fat girl, bookworm, and wallflower who'd ever felt powerless in the wake of the Courtneys of the world. I laughed because I knew that when I got up, Jenny was going to have to explain to the Courtneys why she had lied to them. She was going to be left holding the conversational bag for once. I laughed because this was such a silly high school drama to find oneself enmeshed in at the ripe old age of 28. Once I'd recovered, I wiped at my eyes, hoping there weren't streaks of blood tears running from my lashes. Other diners had lifted their heads from their tacos and were starting to stare. I stood up, prompting another communal flinch, and tossed some bills on the table, enough to make up a 40% tip for my buddy the waiter. "That is my big sister," I said loudly, "always looking out for number one. You girls are hilarious. Courtney, what a sense of humor you have. I had a great time tonight. Thanks for asking me. I'll see you at the next meeting." I took two steps, then turned around, prompting the entire table to press back away from me, knocking short Courtney off her chair. "By the way, the waiter figured it out faster than y'all did, and he had a hell of a lot more class about it." I giggled all the way from the table to the front door, to the point that Hector stopped me at the door and asked if I was okay to drive. "I'm fine," I assured him. "Sober as a judge."
"You haven't seen Judge Fry in here after about three beers," Hector snickered. "He wears a sombrero and everything." "Hey, Jane, are you going to the reunion? It's coming up pretty soon."
"I don't know. I haven't really thought it through."
"What's to think through?" he asked. "You see some old friends, laugh at everybody who got fat and bald, get drunk off spike punch, and go home. Come on. I'll need somebody to listen to my bad jokes. I miss seeing you and Zeb around here. You used to come in all the time, you know, before..."
I winced but realized that Hector was standing as close to me as he always had. The friendly warmth in his eyes was genuine. "Yeah, before."
"Look, I don't care. I haven't been attacked by a vampire yet. I don't figure you're going to be the one to do it. I am a little hurt that you don't come in here anymore, but I figure you have your reasons."
"I can't eat." Hector chuckled.
"Well, that's a reason. But we put that bottled blood stuff on the menu for a reason, Jane. We don't turn away anybody's money here, dead or undead. You're always welcome. But try for Wednesdays, because I want you to see Judge Fry do what he thinks is the Mexican hat dance."
"Thanks, Heck."
"Anytime," he said, giving me a brotherly punch on the arm. "And the reunion. Think about it, okay?
I will. I laughed and bopped his bicep lightly.
How?
He said, rubbing his arm dramatically.
You didn't hit so hard in high school.
People change, I told him, giggling as I walked out the front entrance. Andrea and I were backed up on several days' worth of deliveries that we hadn't had a chance to open, so we sat at the coffee bar pretending it was Christmas. I think that's the cookbooks I ordered, I said, taking a load of packing peanuts to the trash as Andrea picked up an Amazon.com box. Apparently some chef in New York was turned and is doing amazing things with drinkable sauces that are tasty and won't make vampires vomit, so I got a dozen of them. Andrea bounced the package gently.
It seems kind of light for a dozen books. I think it's probably that unnatural number of Jason Statham DVDs you ordered.
He has to have filmed a nude scene at some point in his career. I don't care how many shoot-'em-up action movies I have to watch, I will find it, I said solemnly.
Oh, yes, I will find it.
Andrea rolled her eyes as she pressed the brass athame Mr. Wainwright used as a letter opener to the packing tape.
I know money isn't really that much of a concern for you anymore, but have you ever stopped to examine some of your odder spending habits?
I'm comfortable with the balance. Do you smell something? The back of my throat itched as Andrea sliced through the tape. She squealed when the box hissed and then spattered her face with a sheer silvery mist. I tried to call out to her, but my throat wasn't working right. I screamed noiselessly as smoke rose from my arms. My skin crackled and burned. I think I made a very undignified, strangled, screeching noise as I smacked the box off the counter to the floor. Dick emerged from the back room, coughing. I heard Andrea screaming, "What is it? What is it?" while I dropped to my knees and gave hoarse, choking, rattling coughs. My throat was closing up. I didn't have to breathe, but the inability to draw in air was even more painful than the slow flames of pain licking at my face. I was going to die. For real this time, I could feel it. My strength was ebbing out of my limbs, and I could feel my body shutting down. Gabriel. I would never fix things with Gabriel. Until that moment, I hadn't realized I had expected that I would. As the edges of my vision began to darken and blur, I struggled to tell Andrea to find Gabriel, to tell him how sorry I was.
"Get it out of here," Dick yelled as he swooped behind the counter. "Keep the door open."
Andrea, still wiping frantically at her cheeks, tossed the box out through the front door. Dick propped me up against his chest and dragged a fingernail across his wrist.
"Come on, sweetheart. Come on, Jane, please. Calm down and drink."
Dick coughed slightly as he pressed his wrist to my mouth. He hissed in pain as my mouth touched his skin. The flesh against my lips sizzled and turned black as his skin reacted to the silver on my face. He murmured soothing words as I struggled to swallow.
"Good, good. You need this. It will help. There's a girl. Long, slow sips."
Despite the fact that our organs are no longer functioning, vampire cells actually reproduce at a rapid rate. When we're injured, tendrils of tissue and muscle reach out to each other to replicate the previous alignment, which is why we don't gain weight or age. Drinking the blood of another vampire, particularly an older one, speeds the process along. The blood pouring down my throat was a balm. The comfort was almost instantaneous. My skin stopped smoking. The burning subsided. My throat relaxed, allowing Dick's blood to soothe and heal. And laced through it all, like a gold ribbon streaking through the pain, I felt love. Dick really did love me, in a sweet, brotherly manner that sent his thoughts scattered in a million directions. Images whizzed by without rhyme or reason. Our meeting in the parking lot at the cellar, Dick coming to River Oaks and realizing that Gabriel was my sire, me introducing him to Andrea, Dick bickering with Gabriel while I refereed, his trailer exploding, Dick spending time with Zeb, Andrea and Dick dancing at Zeb's wedding, sitting with Andrea at her kitchen table. All of these little scenes were tenuously connected to his knowing me. He saw his life as being better after he met me. He didn't want to lose that.
Aw.
I broke away from him and let him wrap his arms around me, hugging me close.
"Don't ever do that to me again. Do you understand?"
Dick demanded, his voice rough. I nodded,
squeezing his shoulders before he released me and checked the damage to my face. I didn't mention the visions, even though we both knew what I'd seen. Dick wasn't much for big emotional displays. Gently, he leaned me against the cabinet. I pressed tentative fingers against the raw, ravaged skin of my cheeks as Dick rummaged for a wet rag. "What the hell was that?" I wheezed. Rubbing his wrist as the flesh reformed and healed, Dick said, "You were having the vampire version of a bad allergic reaction. Can you explain to me how you managed to release aerosol silver directly into your own face? What's next for you? Steak juggling?" And with that, Dick had recovered from his fit of fraternal devotion.
"Why are we assuming that I did this to myself?" I growled, my voice still hoarse.
Dick gave me a flat stare.
"It was worth a shot,"
I said, swiping the rag across my cheeks.
"Andrea. Andrea opened the box. Is she okay?"
"I'm fine," she said, peering over the counter, rubbing her own face with a dust rag. "It doesn't even hurt. I'm sorry I screamed. It just freaked me out."
"Ugh. Just promise you'll let me have the panic attack next time we're accosted by the mail."
Dick seized Andrea's shoulders and hugged her long and hard.
"Dick, can't breathe,"
she wheezed.
"Sorry. Delayed reaction to you using your panic voice. I love you like crazy, woman. It does strange things to me,"
he said before kissing her. He winced as the silver sizzled against his lips. He pulled away, carefully sniffing her face.
"That was so sweet," Andrea said, "until you sniffed me."
"Colloidal silver," he announced. "A pretty strong dose of it."
"The health supplement stuff?" I said, raising an eyebrow.
"Why am I not surprised that you know what it is?" Andrea grumbled, rinsing her face under the coffee bar tap. "Okay, geek girl, would you mind filling in the people who don't memorize everything they read?"
"It's basically microscopic clusters of silver particles in liquid. New age types use it for everything from burns to eye infections because it supposedly keeps germs from being able to metabolize. Hundreds of health supplement websites sell it. It's perfectly safe for humans, with the exception of people who take too much over a long period of time. They have a tendency to turn blue. But obviously, it seriously screws with vampires." Andrea stared at me, her expression amazed and amused. I shrugged.
"I saw it on Oprah."
"But how did it get sprayed at us from what was supposed to be a box of books?" Andrea griped. "What supervillain did you piss off this time, Jane?"
Dick examined the box carefully.
"It looks like a pretty simple device. Once the tape was ruptured and the box top split, a lever compressed on this spray can and sent the silver into the air. In fact, if that had happened in a room full of humans, it wouldn't have been a problem. But obviously someone thought there would be a good chance you would be opening the box."
"You seem to have figured that out awfully fast," I commented dryly.
"It's a common trick if you've pissed off a vampire," Dick said.
I narrowed my eyes at him. He gave me his best impression of an innocent person's indignant protest.
"Not that I've ever done it."
"So basically, we're looking for the Unabomber or MacGyver," I muttered. "Why is someone always trying to kill me? This never happened to me when I was alive."
Chapter 12. Don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Sometimes we have to bare our souls to our vampire mates and say, "Yes, I'm invincible and immortal, but you can still hurt me." Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships. We'd underestimated how far the silver had sprayed. I could see faint misting spatters of the grayish liquid along the far wall of the shop. Suddenly, very weary, I wondered how long it would take to clean up the mess. Not that I was much help in that department anyway. Andrea and Dick forced me to sit across the room farthest from Ground Zero with an ice bag on my cheeks, while Andrea wet vacuumed the carpet. Dick was wearing a surgical mask and elbow-length rubber gloves to wipe down the bar with disinfectant. I sat there, feeling sort of useless, as Gabriel came roaring through the front door, his eyes wild. From the panicked, crazed look on his face, I thought he'd finally snapped and was going to go all bunny boiler on me. But when his eyes connected with mine, there was such powerful relief there that I couldn't be afraid. He bounded across the room and tenderly cradled my blistered face between his palms, poring over the damaged skin. Even though I was still mad at him, even though I still had enough of my pride to sting at the thought of him seeing me in full Freddy Krueger mode, I threw my arms around him and buried my face in his neck. "It's okay. It's okay," I sniffled. "I'm fine." I relaxed into Gabriel's arms and let him rock me gently back and forth. I knew things weren't settled yet. We were going to have a lot of long, long talks about trust, fidelity, communication, and not dropping one's sexual partner's naked ass onto concrete. But for the moment, I was willing to skip it all. I just wanted someone to care whether my face disintegrated or not. I don't think that's a violation of feminist principles. "What is he doing here?" Andrea demanded, giving Gabriel the glare of 1,000 suns.
"I called him," Dick muttered.
"You what?" Andrea cried. Gabriel lifted his head from my shoulder and growled at Dick.
"How could you let this happen?"
Dick looked sheepish.
"I can't watch her every minute, son. How was I supposed to know she'd be attacked by ground shipping?"
The two of them shared a look over my head. Gabriel made several threatening faces. Dick responded with rude gestures. Eventually, they looked like two inebriated mimes having a dance-off. "Would someone clue the scabby girl in on the conversation?" I demanded.
"Dick was supposed to be watching you," Gabriel admitted. "He's been watching you for me for a while now."
"Well, that explains why you've spent so much time at the shop." I took a swipe at Dick, who lithely stepped out of the way toward Andrea. She smacked him in my stead. "I do not need the Dick and Gabriel Secret Service detail."
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry," Gabriel whispered. "It's not that I didn't trust you to take care of yourself. Between the letters and the pranks, I was scared. I just wanted to protect you."
"Which is probably what put me in danger, jackass," I said, half-heartedly slapping at his arm.
"I love you. Love you so much," he whispered into my neck. "I don't know what I would have done if you'd been..." "I am a huge jackass."
"That's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me," I told him, ignoring Andrea when she said, "That's just sad."
"She's fine," Dick said. "Really, Gabe, she's going to be okay. She's a tough little nut."
"Dick saved me," I told Gabriel. "Without him, I would be a little pile of Jane ashes waiting to be vacuumed up."
"Thank you," Gabriel told Dick.
Dick seemed to be waiting for a punchline, so Gabriel repeated it.
"I mean it. Thank you."
Dick would have blushed if he was capable. Instead, he made a study of the floor.
"Can I see the device?"
Gabriel asked. Dick retrieved the box, which we had wrapped in a clear plastic bag.
"The label was intact, undamaged,"
Dick said, showing Gabriel the address flap.
"You couldn't even tell the box had already been taped once until you took off the second layer."
"So whoever it was would have had to monitor our dumpster closely enough to wait for a barely damaged Amazon.com box with an intact label to be thrown away?" I made a face and then winced at the pressure on my burnt cheeks. "You know, I think I'm more upset by that than I am the silver thing."
"The silver is very pure," Gabriel observed. "I can smell it even from here. Colloidal silver tends to be higher in concentration than the mix used in defense sprays, and this seems to be a particularly potent batch. If this had sprayed you directly in the face instead of Andrea, you might not have survived. It would be like someone who is allergic to bee stings stepping on a hive. Your healing ability would have been overwhelmed and you would have been stripped down to the bone. Young vampires rarely come back from injuries like that."
"Didn't you say your new friend Courtney runs a sterling silver shop?"
Dick asked.
"Who's Courtney?" Gabriel asked.
"I met her at the Chamber of Commerce."
"You belong to the Chamber of Commerce?"
"Hey, I haven't been sitting around moping after you. I am a very busy and important woman." Andrea gave me a smirking yet disapproving look. I amended, "I moped a little bit." Dick rolled his eyes.
Someone who runs a jewelry business would be pretty well versed in the different forms of silver, especially high concentration stuff.
Oh, come on, guys, don't do this, I whined. I really like Courtney. Well, that one, at least. I just want one normal human friend without a frightening agenda. Please don't take that from me.
I think that hurts my feelings, Andrea muttered.
Besides, I think we all know who... I was interrupted as Emery sauntered from the rear of the shop. He stopped and sniffed delicately at the harsh disinfectants, shuddering.
What's that smell? It smells like burnt popcorn in here, he said, gagging.
Emery, how long have you been here? Andrea asked.
I just arrived, Andrea dear, he said, offering her an overly gooey smile. I came in the staff entrance.
It was locked, Dick noted, his jaw set as he pulled Andrea just a little bit closer.
I borrowed a key,
Emery said in the dismissive tone he always used when talking to Dick. You're going to give that back now, I told him, not bothering to disguise the irritation in my voice. Emery ignored me, his eyes sweeping over the disheveled room.
What happened?
Someone sent Jane a can of aerosol silver, which sprayed all over the shop, Dick said, watching Emery carefully for a reaction.
Did it get on any of the more important books?
Emery demanded with a shriek.
Does liquid silver stain? Have you contacted your insurance agent?
Sadly, that was exactly the reaction I'd expected. I sincerely looked forward to the day when Dick revealed their blood connection to Emery. And then Dick took his great-great-grandson out to the woodshed for an old-fashioned ass-whooping. And I'm fine. Thank you, I muttered. I felt a low growl rumble deep in Gabriel's chest. I placed a restraining hand across his shoulders. As much as I appreciated Gabriel's indignant response, Emery couldn't help that he was raised to be a socially clueless tool. Plus, spilling Emery's blood would probably damage more books.
Well, of course, I'm concerned for you, Jane, but obviously you're fine, Emery said, giving another delicate shudder at the sight of my ravaged face. But who knows what kind of damage this little prank has done? Who knows how many books have been ruined?
We're not really worried about that right now, Emery, Andrea said. We're just grateful that Jane's all right.
Of course you are. You're such a good friend, Andrea.
Emery pressed Andrea's hands between his. Dick's eyes narrowed into dangerous little slits.
We'll start checking the books just as soon as we have all this cleaned up, Dick told him. Why don't you head on home to the boarding house or the malt shop or wherever you wholesome type spend your evenings?
I can help, Emery protested. You probably want to clean the silver off the books as soon as possible if you're going to salvage them. Besides, it wouldn't do for poor Jane to stumble across a book soaked in silver months from now, would it? We can't have those sorts of hazards just lurking around the shop for her or our vampire customers. I'm willing to examine every single book, if it means making the shop safe for Jane and her friends.
Andrea and I can handle it, Dick told him.
Wouldn't it be better to have an extra pair of hands helping you?
Emery countered. He gave Andrea a long, simpering look.
Besides, it's obvious that Andrea is shaken by the incident. I'd like to pitch in and help her however I can.
Emery, look. I stood on wobbly legs. My head swam, and the floor tilted toward me.
I don't feel so well.
You're going home,
Gabriel told me as he caught my elbows and kept me from smacking my head on the floor.
Dick, would you mind closing up?
I was too dazed to object or hear Dick's response. Dick and Andrea could figure out what to do with Emery. I let Gabriel lead me to his car and tuck me into the passenger side. I stared out the window, unsure of what to say, as he drove me to River Oaks. When we got there, he let Fitz out to run and took me to the upstairs bathroom, where he carefully stripped me out of the silver-laced clothes. While Gabriel ran bathwater, I caught a glimpse of my face in the mirror and was relieved to see that it no longer looked like raw hamburger. I had a few shiny, pale pink patches across my cheeks and nose, like a human recovering from a bad sunburn. Gabriel let me slip in under the bubbles, and I closed my eyes to avoid looking at him while he ran a sponge down my still-healing arms and legs. He poured some of my fancy anti-frizz shampoo into his palm and massaged it through my hair. Apparently he didn't expect me to talk about my feelings or how awkward it was for me to let him see me naked again, especially with my fabulous shiny pink healing burns. It was just as well. I wasn't sure how I felt about him seeing me naked again, with or without shiny pink healing burns. When he tilted my head back to rinse my hair, I caught him staring at my face. You'd expect someone in his situation to be sneaking looks about 8 inches south, but he was wholly concentrated on my face. The burns must have been worse than I thought. "I know it's bad," I told him, "but I'm feeling a lot better."
"No, you're almost completely healed. I'm trying to take in as much as I can before you're strong enough to dropkick me out the door."
"Why are you being so sweet?" I asked.
"Because you're letting me,"
he said, a sad little lopsided smile tilting his mouth.
"I'm so sorry."
"I missed you too, but I didn't do anything wrong. Ergo, no apology."
"I can live with that."
He nodded, gently pouring warm water over my head.
"I would like you to consider moving to my house for a while, Jane."
"I couldn't do that. It would feel weird. And I don't think living together would be right for us at the moment. There's too much going on."
"Well, then move into Andrea's place. At least until the threats stop."
My eyebrows arched, the new skin around them stretching tight. "Andrea's place? Where Dick lives? You must be scared."
"I don't want anything to happen to you."
"I'll be fine. And I'll be much more careful when I open the mail, I promise." He gave me a withering, fatherly look. "I'll let Andrea open the mail from now on?" When that didn't satisfy him, I huffed, "I'll take it to the airport and have it x-rayed?"
"I will be spending a lot more time at the shop with you," he said. "You don't even have to acknowledge my presence. I will just sit in the back and watch you to make sure you're safe. Wherever you go, I go."
"Like a stalker?"
He nodded. "Yes. Jane, I don't care what capacity you let me have in your life. I just want to be there. And if that means I have to keep my distance, I'll do that."
I sighed. If ever there was a time for me to lay all my cards on the table, this was it. Naked, wounded, and vulnerable. So, here's my basic problem with us. The reason I can't seem to relax into a relationship with you. The reason I find problems where none exist and I push you away. I can't figure out why you're with me, I exclaimed, clapping my hand over my mouth. I hadn't meant for that part to come out. I had meant to say, you lie and hide things from me. Gabriel pried my fingers away from my lips. My hands trembled as stuff I'd been feeling for months tumbled from my tongue. I know that makes me neurotic and sad, but I can't figure out why you want to be with me. Every other woman in your life is exotic and beautiful and has all this history. And I'm just some drunk girl you followed home from a bar. Some pathetic human you felt your usual need to protect and you got stuck with a lifetime tie to her because she was dumb enough to get shot. I can't stand the idea that you feel obligated to me. I know I'm insecure and pushy and spastic, desperately inappropriate at times and just plain odd at others. And I can't help but wonder why you would want that when there are obviously so many other options. I can't help but feel that I'm keeping you from someone better. I let out a loud, long breath. It felt as if some tremendous weight on my chest had wiggled loose and then dropped away. No more running. No more floating along and waiting. My cards were on the table. If Gabriel and I couldn't have a future after this, it wasn't because I held back from him. Now I could only hope it didn't blow up in my face in some horrible way. I wasn't sure my face could handle much more. Gabriel sighed and cupped my chin, forcing me to look him in the eye.
I didn't follow you that night because I wanted to protect you. I followed you that night because you were one of the most interesting people I'd met in decades. You had this light about you, this sweetness, this biting humor. After I'd only known you for an hour, you made me laugh harder than I had since before I was turned. You made me feel normal, at peace, for the first time in years. And I didn't want to lose that yet. Even if it was just watching over you from a mile away, I didn't want to leave your presence. I followed you because I didn't want to let you go. Even then, I saw you were one of the most extraordinary, fascinating, maddening people I would ever know. Even then, I think I knew that I would love you. If you don't love me, that's one thing. But if you do, just stop arguing with me about it. It's annoying.
Fair enough, I conceded. Why the hell couldn't you have told me this a year ago?
I've wanted to. You weren't ready to hear it.
The water cooled. Gabriel helped me out of the tub and wrapped my robe around me. I snuggled up under the covers and pulled him under with me. He held me close for a long, silent moment before I finally said, "Tell me about Janine. Tell me everything. I won't get mad, no matter how bad it is." Gabriel turned me to face him, stroking my hair.
I met Janine on one of my first visits to Paris. Her family had old money, very old. Her parents died when she was young, leaving her to be raised by a criminally indulgent grandmother. Janine's mother had been prone to spells, during which her grandmother attended to her every need. So Janine learned early on that being weak and sickly was the fastest way to get attention. Batteries of doctors, nurses, and maids catered to her every whim around the clock. And yet they could never find exactly what was ailing her. Her symptoms shifted like the sands, leaving her grandmother frantic that she would lose another beloved girl. Janine was never forced to study subjects she found boring, never forced to meet family or social obligations she found unappealing, never made to do anything that didn't suit her down to her stamping little foot. The end result was a girl with a woefully limited education, little empathy, and no apparent conscience. She spent so much time pretending to be ill that she convinced herself she was. The whole of Paris society spoke in quiet admiration of this pale rose who only braved the trials of public appearances every so often for the opera or an important party. She was beautiful. Mahogany hair, always curled into the latest fashions. Bottomless eyes the color of bluebells. Her skin was so...
I get it. She made tuberculosis hot, I said crossly. On with the story. In a slightly less admiring voice, Gabriel assured me,
I found her to be manipulative, spoiled, and not nearly as wan or silly as she wanted us to believe. She was what you would have quite freely called a pain in the ass. But she was also very clever. Most of her incapacitation was spent reading.
I thought you said she didn't study.
Oh, she read what suited her. Romance novels, gothic horror. Unfortunately, some of her library included gothic romance tales, Varney the Vampire and Carmilla.
Those are pretty hardcore books for the time, I commented. Surely well-bred and invalid young ladies did not read lurid lesbian vampire fantasies. Gabriel arched an eyebrow at me. Not that I've read them. Moving on.
As I said, her grandmother was indulgent. She would go to any lengths to lift poor Janine's spirits, including discreetly procuring naughty books. Janine recognized what I was right away. She approached me, throwing herself in my path wherever I went, the ballet, parties, even a late-night card game at a friend's home. It was becoming a joke among my friends. Her grandmother encouraged the infatuation, because she seemed to think that whatever got Janine out of bed and into the world was a good thing. One night, Janine cornered me at a ball and told me she knew my secret, but not to worry, she wouldn't tell a soul. All I had to do in return was to make her what I was.
She wanted to be turned? Gabriel muttered.
For someone who spent so much time on her deathbed, she was terrified of death. The idea of becoming old and not having the choice of being confined and ill was horrible to her. She thought, by becoming a vampire, she would finally be free from illness, stronger, able to get out from under the control of her grandmother, whom she began resenting long before. I refused, told her she was mistaken. I even used my burgeoning powers to wipe all thoughts or memories she had pertaining to my being a vampire, but her obsession ran deeper than my reach. Within a few weeks, she was back again, and more determined. She was everywhere. I switched hotels endlessly to dodge her. She excelled at knowing my schedule before I did. Everywhere I went, there was a note from her, cajoling, wheedling, promising me her undying devotion, endless love and companionship.
That sounds vaguely familiar, I said dryly. He sighed.
Finally, she found the hotel where I was staying. I came home one morning to find her on my bed.
Slut?
Fully clothed, with both wrists slashed, he added.
Ew.
She was on the brink of death. She had just enough breath to whisper, "Help me, please." I knew it was wrong.
But, being unable to pass up a damsel in distress, which is a bit of a pattern with you, by the way, you intervened, I said, cupping his chin in my hands.
Yes. I felt it was my fault she had done this. I hadn't been forceful enough in dissuading her. I could have done more. There was no blood left to take from her, but I gave her my own. Afterward, I felt used, angry, helpless. I'd panicked and turned someone who was going to be an undead terror. I was ashamed of what I'd done. I knew what sort of evil she would be capable of, and yet I still couldn't bring myself to destroy her, to keep her from rising and walking the earth. I slept on the floor of the hotel room, and when I rose that night, I took her to the home of a friend, a fellow vampire, a woman, Violette, who was 340 years old at the time and less likely to be manipulated by Janine. I hoped that when she arose, Violette would prove to be a mentor, a stabilizing influence. By that time, I'd booked passage to China.
Dramatic, I noted.
Necessary, Gabriel countered. Janine is a prime example of a vampire who changed not at all after she was turned. She's just as neurotic and self-absorbed now as she was then. She's the only hypochondriac vampire I've ever met. She travels with a humidifier, for God's sake. She's so convinced that every place she goes will be her final resting place that she carries all of her possessions with her in a moving van.
I snickered, but he continued.
And when vampirism didn't change the way she looked at herself, the way she felt, she blamed me. She believes she's a lesser vampire. She said that I didn't turn her properly. She believes she's still weak and sickly, so obviously she didn't get enough of my blood. She wants me to try to turn her again.
Is that even possible? I asked.
Once your transformation is complete, that's the way you'll remain for the rest of your existence. The point is that I did turn Janine completely. I gave her more than enough of my blood. She refuses to believe me. I've tried to talk some sense into her, to teach her restraint. But when she doesn't get what she wants, her tantrums turn out to be massacres. She became convinced that the only cure for her condition was the blood of those who had lived in high altitudes. So she drained every nun in a convent in Tibet. She's butchered hospitals worth of doctors because they can't find any way to help her. She spent almost 100 years trying to track me down, doing what she can to isolate me, ruin my friendships, my relationships with women. She'll become dormant for a few years while she recuperates at a mineral spring or a monastery or some other supposedly curative location. And then she'll get restless and start up again. When it became clear that she was beyond my help, my focus became keeping her away from the people, the places I cared about. That's the reason I've spent so much time bouncing between the Hollow and, well, the rest of the world for the last century. She says I owe her, that I made her, and now I'm responsible for what she's become. And she's right. She's my creation. The blood of every person she's ever killed is on my hands. Gabriel pressed his face against my shoulder, cringing as if he expected me to start screaming and hitting him. I waited a beat before saying, "So really, I'm not the craziest girl you've ever dated. That's a relief." "Your grasp of the weight of this situation is amazing," he retorted. I shrugged. "I'm just saying." "So, you're not angry?" he asked. "Of course I'm angry," I exclaimed. "I'm freaking furious with you right now. If I was up to full strength, I would kick your ass from here to Sunday. I can't believe that this is what you kept from me all these months. I thought you cheated on me. You let me suffer and mope and go months without seeing you because of some issue with a bratty child. You and your stupid, overactive conscience. From now on, you are going to gauge the severity of your actions by answering the question, would Dick think this was a good idea? And if the answer is no, that's when you know you've done something really, really wrong. Either way, just tell me about it so we avoid these dramatics. If you had told me about this months ago, I would have helped you track her down and lock her in some vampire nut ward." "That's exactly why I didn't tell you. I didn't want you to know what I'd let happen, that I wasn't even trying to stop her anymore, just outrun her. I shouldn't have lied to you. And it kills me that I hurt you in a misguided attempt to protect you, especially when it seems that isn't doing any good. All I can say is that I panicked. I was ashamed. I was trying so hard to cover my tracks that I lost sight of what was important. You." "Why were you ashamed?" I asked. He lifted my chin, meeting my eyes. "I was a coward. If this had happened to you, you would have stopped her. You would have gone after her with both barrels and talked her into submission. And when you left me in that hotel room, I was torn between wanting to drop to my knees, tell you everything and beg your forgiveness, and wanting you to leave, to get away, so you would be far from Janine and her madness. I thought I'd feel better once you were home, but I was decimated. I sat in that hotel room for a week, unsure of what to do, where to go, how to feel, all the while hoping you would come back, but knowing that you shouldn't." "Technically, decimated means the reduction of a military force by one-tenth," I pointed out. "I love it when you do that." He sighed, pressing his face into my hair. "I haven't had anyone to correct me or fill my head with useless trivia for months." "You poor soul," I muttered, smiling despite myself. "Besides, I wouldn't say you're a coward. You pushed a tree on top of a guy for me." I laced my arms around his waist and pulled him against me. "So, you were wrong."
"I was absolutely, unequivocally, undeniably, 100% wrong,"
he agreed, accenting each word with a soft kiss on my throat.
"Which would mean that you were absolutely, unequivocally, undeniably, 100% right,"
he said, again with the kissing. "You know, a woman waits her whole life to hear those words," I sighed. I straightened, lifting my head. I looked up into his face and caught a flicker of uncertainty. "What? What's with the face?"
"Well, I can believe Janine sent you letters," he said, "and maybe even rubbing your house with exotic unpleasant fruit. But the silver, that seems rather aggressive for her. She's absolutely phobic of any sort of silver, claims she's more sensitive to it than most vampires because of her delicate constitution. For her to send it to you, she must be getting desperate.
Either that or I have another stalker, I wisecracked.
Oh, crap. You said you've turned 3 people, including me. Who was the 3rd?
I poked him when he didn't respond. Total honesty.
It's a much shorter story. I met Brandley in the 1950s in London. He was a young medical student, brilliant. He spent most of his time in a lab, studying vaccines. From the moment I met him, I could tell that he was very ill. There was a taint to his scent, an undercurrent of decay. Leukemia. But when I thought of what he could accomplish, how he could benefit mankind when he had unlimited time to conduct his research, I gave him a choice. Impending natural death or everlasting life. He took it. I was so careful turning him, staying with him until he rose, coaching him through those first few days. And at first, it was wonderful to have a companion, someone to hunt with, to talk to. Like yours, Brandley's learning curve was quite steep. He adjusted beautifully to his new life, but unlike you, Brandley had an enormous aptitude for cruelty. He had no interest in study or science when he could spend his nights drowning in the blood of his victims. I tried to teach him patience, pity for his food, but for him, the meal seemed incomplete if they survived.
I chewed my lip. Should we worry about Brandley coming after us? Because I don't want to go through this whole bratty demon stepchild thing again.
Brandley's dead. He was killed by an angry Welsh mob who objected to his tendency of feeding off their very young daughters.
Are you sure he's dead? I asked.
Well, they cut his head off, so yes.
I was quiet for a long moment. You have really, really bad luck when it comes to vampire children, don't you? I mean, how could you have worked up the nerve to turn me? Because it could have gone just horribly, horribly wrong.
Who's to say it hasn't? Gabriel muttered. And stop using adverbs twice. It's insulting.
Seriously, why would you put yourself through that when you'd had such terrible experiences as a sire?
He kissed me, pressing his lips ever so softly against mine. Because you were different. When I told you that your goodness and your innocence set you apart, I meant it. I'd had reservations when I turned Janine, and some reluctance about turning Brandley, but when I saw you, bleeding and dying, I knew without a doubt that you deserved a second chance, that you would make the most of your vampire life, without cruelty, without being petty or selfish. You're the best part of me, Jane. The gift I could give the world to make up for past wrongs.
That's either incredibly beautiful or a lot of pressure to put on me, Gabriel snorted.
I love you.
I love you too, idiot.
Agreed. He sighed. I've never had a lover I've met as a human and known as a vampire. I've never made love to someone I sired. I didn't count on my feelings of love and concern and responsibility twisting into such a confusing mess.
So I'm your first? He seemed startled by the question.
Yes. The last thing on my mind was sex with Janine, and, well, Brandley was a man.
So you've never...
No.
I threw up my hands. Hey, vampires are hypersexual creatures. Our boundaries are not like those of humans. And then, of course, there's all that tension between you and Dick. You can't really blame me for thinking,
Jane.
I shrugged. Okay, you're totally heterosexual.
You're enjoying my discomfort right now, aren't you?
He growled. Immensely, I told him, snickering as I bit down on his bottom lip. This is my proposal. Simple and to the point. We track this Janine twit down and kick her ass. Gabriel sighed again, burying his face in my hair.
That's my girl.
I would have gotten into a long-term relationship years ago if someone had told me about the almighty power of makeup sex. We talked long into the night about our months apart. We seemed to see it as a competition.